We're always talking about take the tailwind challenge, Scott. And what is the tailwind challenge exactly?
Well, first of all, they were brilliant from the inception. When we first got to know Tailwind, they had a tailwind challenge. Mm-hmm. And they still have it, which is a testament that it works. The tailwind challenge is very, very simple. All you do is you go on to tailwindnutrition.com, or you can link over from our partners page, and you get 4 of the 50 serving bags.
200 servings.
200 servings. So 4 big bags you can get. They have 5 flavors.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pick from the 5 flavors. You get 4 big bags.
Got it.
You get a 10% discount on that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you train with it. You race with it. And if you're not completely satisfied with what Tailwind was able to do for you, they will refund your race fee for that race.
Hmm.
Now, there is some fine print, Mr. Freeman.
Yes, yes. Please read the fine print for me.
The fine print is you can't go run one of Candace Burt's 200-mile races that costs $650 and get the $650 back. The race fee that they will pay up to $150. So it's actually better than money back.
Well, because you pay $125 to get the 4 bags.
And they'll pay up to $150 back to you if you're not satisfied.
Now, that's putting your money where your bottle is.
And I'm telling you, if they're not losing money,
right? Or they
by
would,
doing this.
They would have stopped a long time ago.
One of these times, I want to ask Jenny confidentially how many times they've actually had to pay out. I don't think very many times.
No, no. Hey, so do what others are doing, Scott, and go out and get yourself some Tailwind. Race directors are using it. Athletes all over the world are using it.
We get emails all the time.
Love
people
that
are saying, hey, thanks for letting us know about Tailwind because it's made a difference in our running.
So go to Tailwind Nutrition, check out the flavors, and fill up your bottles and go run.
Moss. Ultra Running Magazine.
In my email today,
yeah,
because I'm an Ultra Running Magazine subscriber.
Of course you are.
But additional added value content, mm-hmm. I get emails. And I love opening them up. And there's such engaging things. How-to stuff. How-to Ultra Run. I just love that magazine.
You can go to ultrarunning.com, which is their website, which also has additional content. You can do some research on there. There's one article on here that really caught my attention. It is called Pacing in a 100-miler, a nice way to spend the evening.
You know what? That title right there makes me want to
read it.
Oh,
right?
sure.
Yeah. So go to trailrunnernation.com to go to our partners page, and you can get a discount. 11.
A full year of Ultra Running Magazine, $29.95, and you don't have to memorize a code or anything. You can just go directly to partners page, and that will link you to the super awesome deal for Trail Runner Nation.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Oh, come on. Don't put yourself down.
We are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I am Scott Warr, and today we are talking with Iron Mike Wardian.
Nice.
If you don't know who Mike Wardian is, he's the guy that has a cape and a big S on his chest. He has done some pretty amazing stuff. So far this year, he just completed and won the Eastern States 100-mile race. We saw him out at Western States 100, where he also competed, got a just over 19-hour Western States 100. But he's not just an ultra-marathoner. He does all sorts of distances. In fact, I don't know whether I can think of a runner that does as many different races and as many races as Mike Wardian. He has won the U.S. 50K championships 3 times. He's also won the U.S. 100K championship once. Last year in 2014, listen to this, Don. He raced 54 different races.
Wow.
And 44 of those, he was in the top 10.
You can call yourself a trail runner just running 54 times a year, let alone racing.
and then he does, Mike, you do some I'm going to say stupid, but I say that with a lot of respect. a lot of weird.
Thanks.
I won't say stupid. Let me say weird or crazy. Or, crazy is a better word.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's we embrace.
You could
crazy.
Try different or unique. Also, I mean, if we're gonna go with,
there's a lot of metaphors.
Yeah, there's a lot of different adjectives. Is it adjective or metaphor? I don't know.
I think you.
Metaphor
I think you're right.
is like something else.
Yeah,
right?
my metaphor.
I'm
is,
not very
is...
smart, but.
within 45 days, he ran 5 marathons and he won 4 of them.
Yikes.
That's nuts. And then he does some really weird stuff. Like he used to hold, I don't know if it still stands, Mike, maybe you can tell me, but the fastest marathon on a treadmill.
No, that does not stand anymore. Someone broke it.
Okay. How about the fastest marathon pushing a stroller?
That still stands, but someone went faster, but they just haven't done the paperwork. So so I think that I still have that record technically, but I know that there is somebody faster.
Hey, Mike, can I ask a question on that? Not that I'm planning on going out and competing for that record with the stroller, but are there some requirements for the stroller, like certain kind, size, weight? I mean, how
does
how
it have to be someone in the stroller?
Yeah, how official does this
yeah.
get?
Yeah. It gets it's a Guinness World Record, so it's super official and it's very professional. And so there are a lot of standards. Like it can't be like your own souped up treadmill that you create just for this event or something. It has to be basically a commercially available treadmill, so like something you could buy at like Toys R Us or baby store, Babies R Us or something, or like I used a Bob stroller. So it was something that I, purchased from, like, I think we got it through Bob actually through their website. So yeah, like it has to be something that everybody could get, right? It's not something that your mom or dad souped up for you. And then, yeah, somebody has to be in there. You can't just put like a bag of flour or like your gels or something in the treadmill. And then, other than that, it's just got to be a certified course. And then you got to prove that you did it. So you need to have an official time and then some type of media. And it's really good if you can get someone to videotape you the whole way. So they like to have like a lot of different parameters checked so that they know that it's not just like, hey, I did this type thing.
So why? What I mean, here,
why?
Here
why you do are I
a,
do it?
Here you're a sponsored athlete and you say, you know what? I think I'm going to push a stroller and try to break the stroller marathon fastest record. Where do you come up with that?
I saw a guy do it when I was running a marathon before I even had kids. And I thought like that was the coolest thing ever. It's a great way to get your kid involved in what you love to do. And it's a really, I just thought it was so neat. I saw it, I think, at the Toronto Marathon, and I was like, I don't know, 10 minutes ahead of this guy or something. And I was like, that is so awesome. Like when I have kids, I want to do that. And I told my wife, and she was not my wife at that point. She was my, just girlfriend. And I was like, yeah, when at some point, we'll probably get married and have kids and I'd like to do that. And so my wife, Jennifer, is just one of the coolest ladies in the world. And so when we had kids, I was like, hey, you remember that thing I told you like 5 years ago? Like, I want to do that. And so she was like, okay, cool. And the first time with our older son, Pierce, it was like, she had so many requirements. You know, I don't know if you guys have kids, but the first one gets the special treatment. The second one, it's a little less regimented, I guess. So,
hey, Mike, yes. the first one gets the Bob stroller, and the second one gets the shopping cart that we picked up that was extra, leaving on the corner. 4 second
yes.
kid.
Basically, yeah, yeah. So the first time it was, and the second time too. There was a lot of precautions taken, but I had like a cell phone. This was like in the days of like flip phones, and I had like enough formula to last for like 3 days and like
which
six
made you go
diapers.
Slower, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But it was all good. And so we were able to set the record. And then, I've done some other like crazy records. Like this year I set the 50K world record on the treadmill. first on a cruise ship and then at a meeting for my sponsor Hoka One One. So their sales meeting, I broke 3 hours. I ran 2:59 on a treadmill for 50 kilometers, and then I've set like the record on an indoor track for 50K at the end of last year. And so yeah, I've done some stuff like that, and also like dressed up as Spider-Man at one point. I had the world record for Spider-Man or superhero costume. So it's funny because I actually battled that guy that broke my record. He broke it at the London Marathon this year. He ran like 2:27, which is smoking fast.
Yeah.
In a costume. And he's such an amazing athlete, like super good runner. But we were racing the next weekend in Australia against each other at the Wings for Life World Run. So we were all just talking trash about like, hey, you stole my Spider-Man record, I'm going to get it back and all this stuff. So that was fun. And, you know, someday I'll have to try to go after that again.
Hey, Scott, before you move off the treadmill, as I see you have something else to add there. What's the difference in time, Mike, between no treadmill and treadmill? What's the differential there? I'm just interested in your times. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my best time is maybe like 2:52, and I ran 2:59 on the treadmill. So about 7 minutes different. So yeah. And that was, I think I could even go faster on the treadmill. If I would just flown back from Australia the day before, I did the world record attempt, and it was a week after doing the Wings for Life World Run where I made it about 70 kilometers or so. So I had a couple races in my legs going into it. So I was happy to be able to break the 3 hours.
Yeah, you said treadmill, but I was thinking when you were pushing the stroller. Yeah, what's...
My best time pushing the stroller is one time I did it with Pierce, and the world record I think that still stands is 2:42, but then... another guy and I actually had a diaper duel like at the Tulsa Route 66 marathon, and he actually finished first and I was second. I think his name's Zach. He ran 2:31 and he actually ended up winning the marathon, and I got second overall, and I ran 2:33 with my second son, Grant. So that's about as fast as I've gone with pushing a jog stroller at the moment.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and our kids are pretty big now. Like they're 9 and 6, so they don't really.
They don't want to sit.
Want to sit in a jog stroller.
You're gonna have to have another kid to try again.
Yeah.
Records are records.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, one of the things that you know, and I'm sure there's multiple scenarios like this that you've done, but one of the times that you qualified and ran the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. You ran it, and then the very next morning, you went and ran the Houston Marathon.
I did, yeah. I ran, I think, 2:21 at the Olympic Trials in Houston, and then I ran 2:31 the next day. And
that's just,
yeah.
That's just that was, nuts. Michael, did someone ever say that you're supposed to rest? Have you
I've
heard,
not that. Heard
that philosophy?
I've heard that. Yeah, my wife has said if we ever had a dollar for everyone who said that to us, we'd be doing pretty well. So, yeah, I've definitely heard that before.
And that would be if we were out on a trail run and I was fortunate enough to have the same leg turnover that you had at the time, I would ask this question right off the gate. You ran North Face out here, a 50-mile run here this last year, and then we were at the CIM, the California International Marathon, the very next day, and you performed just fantastic there. And I would have said, how... Are you not sore a day after a 50-mile event like San Francisco North Face Challenge? Because that's a tough course, and you were running hard out there. No knee pain, leg fatigue, because I get that, and I'm happy to get to the refrigerator the next morning. And you were, you know, wearing another bib. So
yeah,
what do you feel?
No, I mean, I think I definitely started to lose a little speed at the end. That's just such a really amazingly cool course. So I had the opportunity to jump in to CIM or California International Marathon the next day. And so I took advantage of it. And it was really cool because I ran with my buddy, Rich Hanna. I don't know if you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's a stud, right?
Yeah. Total. Like,
yeah. Total amazing. Stud. Yeah. So he was trying to set the 50 year old course record at California International. And so I was like, oh, I'll run with him a bit. And so we ran the first like 10K and I was like, just kind of getting into it, shaking my legs out. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to try to pick it up a little bit. And I think, you know, I started picking it up and I think I ended up running like 2:33, but he was only like 2 minutes behind me or something. He ran like 2:36 or something. So I think I ended up, I was maybe first or second master. I think it might've been second master. And he was maybe third master overall and first grandmaster, but he broke the record and it was just so cool to be a part of that. So, that was kind of one of the reasons, but you know, I like competing and I like being a part of things. And so that was kind of the other reason.
Hey, so let's talk, since he's not here, let's talk about Rich Hanna.
I love to talk about that dude. He's a badass, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so he goes out, and I don't have the stats in front of me because I didn't know this.
Make him up, Don. He's not here.
He ran, you know, a way to
cool. He'll know, dude. Don't make him up because, like, he knows, like, his training run from like 6 years ago, you know?
Oh yeah.
He's one of those type of dudes.
Well, he owns a timing company.
Yeah.
So
he does. Yeah.
He's into that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll just speak in general terms. He goes out and hammers a 50K some 20 plus years back and then comes out and then does it again, you know, some decades later. And that's amazing that you can have that kind of longevity and that type of...
And wasn't his time, like, close?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, are you guys talking about Wade Cool?
Yeah,
right?
I am. Right.
Yeah, yeah. He crushed that. I think he might have been, like, second overall or something. Or...
Yeah, we could look it up, but I'll tell you that I don't know where... How do you maintain that kind of turnover and lung capacity and just vibrant, you know, being just what you said, an incredible athlete?
Oh, he's just so I think it just comes down to he loves it, man. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that he just sticks with it and he's consistent about his training. But I think what it really comes down to is he just loves being out there. Like, and he loves pushing his body and seeing what's possible. And I think that goes a long way. I mean, talent is one thing and obviously he has that. But I think the passion is something that really allows him to do those type of things.
Yeah, that speaks to his... sticker on the back of his car. He has it says 26 point. You wanted to say what it is, Mike?
I don't know if you're thinking of the same one I am, but I think it's like his half marathon one is like 13.0 is just when you're not committed enough or something.
Right.
Is that the one?
Yep, that's
yeah.
Right. It was the full marathon. It said 26.1 when you're not fully committed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's funny.
Oh, that's funny. So you know, the one thing that I admire you about you, Michael, is you seem to embrace running at all different levels. You know, you do some, you know, on a treadmill, you go and do a track, you go do a trail marathon, and then the next time you're doing a 5K or a 10K.
Yeah.
Why not stick with one race or do well? Let me ask you this question first. Do you have a favorite distance race?
I've gotten this question a few times, and I think like the way that they've asked it too is if you could only do one race for the rest of your life, which would it be, or something like that. And I think what I've always said is I think the most appealing as far as logistically and just with like having a family and a full-time job and all that kind of stuff is probably a marathon because it's a really good, hard, solid challenge. You got to run really hard. You get really wiped out from it. You have to push. It's long enough where you can't just kind of fake it, you know? And it's one of these things where when you finish, you get this like amazing sense of accomplishment. Like, but then you're also home by like, depending on, you know, how fast you run, you're like, it's not like a 20 hour thing where like your family is like, where did he go? You know, so
you can still mow the lawn and go to the park, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you can be home depending on where, you know, if you're not traveling for it or whatever, but you know, you could, you know, do it in the morning and by noon, you know, your life's back to normal. So like that's kind of appealing. That being said, like I love the long stuff, and just winning my first 100 miler this past weekend, I can see why people get so geeked about it, man. You have to dig so deep, and it really challenges you in all these different ways, and not just like the competition, but just with your own body. And you get this like crazy euphoria when you see that finish line. So yeah, I don't know. I'm passionate about all things, and I feel the same way like when I do like really well at a 5K, you know, because you're just hammering your heart's up in your throat, and you're just going as fast as you possibly can. But then when you're done, like 10 minutes later, you're like, okay, sweet, like I can run again, you know. So that's a nice feeling.
Hey,
so I guess I didn't answer it.
I didn't expect you to answer.
That I love all the things.
I didn't expect you to answer, Michael. I think that's the point. Is I don't know whether you have a favorite distance or a different type.
The
of
The next of one, maybe. Right?
Yeah.
Like, what's your favorite race? The next one.
the one you're in.
So the
yeah,
one,
exactly.
You know, you do race a lot. There's a lot of questions that just flood my mind when I think about how many races you run. Why do you have to race that many that much? I mean, is there something about towing the line that just really intrigues you, or you know, most of us normal non-supernatural people, we pick, you know, maybe a half a dozen races a year, or maybe two or three a year, but then train for those. It seems like you're always towing the line.
Yeah. And I love the training part too. But I think like to get the best out of myself, like I find that I do that when I'm put myself in a position where you're on a start line and your objective is to get to the finish line as quick as you can. And I think that brings out the best in me. And I love that sense of accomplishment. I love, you know, putting on the kit, lining up, checking out the competition, seeing if you're ready. And then someone starts a gun and says, go, and you just run as hard as you can until you get to the finish line or you stop. And for me, that's something I just completely enjoy. And I love also the, sense of, companionship you have out there, mm-hmm. in the races. And I think that the sense of adventure for me, as I love the traveling, and I love the meeting new people and getting new experiences and kind of exploring the world, and to do that and get to combine that with running is kind of like a dream come true. So I think that also plays into it, is that sense of adventure. And I think it's just such a great way to cover like amazing amount of distance and see a lot of stuff. And you can't really do that in training. I mean, you can do long training runs, but I think it's harder to get out there for a long, you know, 8-10 hour training run than it is to go out for like a 100K race or something, at least for me at this point in my life.
Hey, Mike, coming off the Eastern States 100, your first 100-mile run, correct?
My first win. Yeah.
Your first win.
No, I've done plenty of 100-milers, never done really well. So it's nice to finally execute.
You know, I don't even know why I said that. I saw you at Western States and on the infield at the end, so I don't know why I didn't think that you I don't know why I said that. I thought I heard you say earlier your first run, and it was win. So
Yeah.
Luckily, I edit this thing. No, but what you'll find out that I won't edit this out. So, hey, so Eastern States, tell us a little bit about that run. We're not on the East Coast. Introduce us a little bit to that race. What's unique about it? What's awesome about it? Teach us something about that event.
Yeah, I think there's a lot about it that's pretty amazing. So the Eastern States 100-mile race, it's a second year event, so it's really new, but they're doing lots of pretty cool stuff. So it's pretty gnarly, it's pretty brutal. It's about 101 or 100 point something miles, but it measures a little bit longer than that, I think. So The winning time has been around 21 hours. I think I just broke the course record. So it's around 21 hours, 21 minutes or so for 20,000 feet of elevation gain. So a little bit more than Western States. And it's kind of East Coast trails. So like a little bit rocky, a little bit rooty, kind of slippy if it gets wet, which it rained a little bit. And then we don't have the altitude, so it doesn't get super high as far as like elevation, but it's just a lot of steady climbs, like 35-40 minute climbs, and then really, really technical descents. So you just have to be ready for picking your feet up, watching where you're going, taking care of yourself. And then the thing that I think would get a lot of people, if they're not ready for it, is it's pretty hot that time of year in Pennsylvania. So it's in Waterville, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour north of State College, in a place that's known, and I didn't know this until I went there, for the Grand Canyon of Pennsylvania. So it's like this big open pit, basically. So you're kind of running around this big valley or depression in the land, and it's really rugged and remote in that that, you know, there's not a lot of cell service. It's kind of like mom and pop stores, if there is a store. It's kind of dirt roads. The course is mostly single track. There's some that's on kind of like fire roads, but it's mostly fire roads to get to the next trail. So you just run from, you know, across it from one set of woods to the next. Some pretty views. And then there's a pretty epic amount of humidity. So that's something that kills a lot of West Coast people. If you're not familiar with humidity, it just makes everything super sweaty and sticky. Aid stations were fantastic. They're really dialed in. The race organizers know what they're doing. They put on a bunch of other events. So it was nice in that aspect. They had a lot of swag, kind of like Western States. You got like a bag and a t-shirt. And the really cool part about it is the thing that you win at the end is like a big old axe. So they instead of like a cougar, you get this big, like fully working, sharp as heck axe. So that's the prize for the winner. So that was kind of unique. I'd never seen a award quite as dangerous and cool. And yeah, they did a great job. And I think this year they had about 185 people registered. I think about 150 people started, and I think they only had about 50 people that were able to finish the race.
Oh, wow.
And I think I was the only person to break 24 hours. So it's full on. I mean, you're out there, and some of the aid stations are a little far apart. So you kind of have some semi autonomy, kind of like a European style race where you have to be smart about what you're taking. So I was lucky. I've done a couple of those races, you know, since after Western States. I went over to Spain and did, the Buff Epic. And I was lucky I did, because that race was 105K with about 8,000 meters of vertical ascent, and it was even gnarlier than the trails in the East Coast here. So I was out there for over 21 hours for a 105K race. So I had paid my dues. So I was lucky that I was expecting Eastern States to be tough, and it lived up to its promise. But I had seen I'd seen a race that kind of mirrored it a little bit ahead of time. So I had some issues in the Buff race that I was able to correct for Eastern States, and it was nice to be able to execute.
You know, there's nothing like building a race as creating a tough invitation, like 185, you know, registered initially and a 50 finish. You know, those those types of things draw attention, and people say, now I want to go try that because it sounds like a real challenge. Well, yeah. Is there a cap on that, or is, you know, the 185, do you know, and maybe we need to ask the race director, but is there a lottery for that, or is that open for people if they want to accept this challenge come year three?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that they're planning to grow the race, and they have capacity up there to be able to do that. So I don't know what their limit is on their permits or anything like that, but I think that they could definitely probably double, and I think that's what their plan is to try to get it up in, you know, 400 or 500. I don't know if it's going to end up, you know, getting as big as something like Leadville where you're over 1,000, but I think that their plan is to keep growing it for sure.
You mentioned humidity as being something that probably kept the 150 starters from crossing the finish line. Do you have any suggestions or thoughts or experiences with preparing for humidity if you're a West Coaster and you need to go to, you know, the East Coast and run successfully? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that it's something that I tend to do for a lot of kind of extreme races. Is it's not the same type of heat, but any type of heat training you can do where you get in the sauna and or you layer up and then run outside and try to go during your lunch hour or something like that. I think that always helps. It kind of makes your body a little bit stronger and more resilient when you're battling the heat. And then just being really mindful of staying properly hydrated and making sure you're getting your electrolytes in. So I was really staying on top of my S-cap. I use S-caps. I don't mm-hmm. know. You can use whatever you want. But so I was very confident in those that they would work, but also in making sure that I was taking them very regularly. And I'm lucky because Washington, D.C., where I live, is a swamp turn like end of May. So for me, that's pretty normal in those conditions. The one nice thing about Eastern states is a lot of it is kind of canopied. So that's great for blocking a lot of the sun during the midday heat, although you are exposed up on the ridge lines. But what it does is it also traps the humidity. So just being careful when you're going into those kind of places to know that, you know, you're not going to have the sun exposure, but that's just going to increase the humidity. So make sure that you take enough water or fluids to get you through until you can get refueled at the aid stations. One thing I did not mention that was super scary, that a lot of people were so worried about is in the last mile, there's a rattlesnake den. So as you're...
What?
No, I'm not joking, dude. There's a rattlesnake
through the den.
You run next to the den. And so if you stray from the trail at all, or it's sunny. So when I came through at like 2 o'clock in the morning, all the rattlesnakes, I guess, were hanging out in bed with each other. But if you come out later in the day, there's this rattlesnake den. So you got to be careful of that. And as I went through the aid station at mile 40, there's a rocky patch for like 5 miles, and they said, watch out, the snakes are out on the patch. So like, it's just straight up, you know, be careful of these rattlesnakes. I think the only thing I saw was a big old porcupine, so that was it.
Well, now I know why the finishing rate's low. Nobody went past the rattlesnake den.
Yeah, I like how they put it at the end, so it's not like you're gonna stop at that point, but man, yeah, that was a little bit dicey.
I want to know if it was really a porcupine or if you were hallucinating a snake to look like a porcupine.
Well, I thought I was hallucinating because it was you pop out of the trail and you make like a hard left on this fire road and it's like less than, I don't know, 100 meters down the road is a right to go back into the trail. And there was a porcupine sitting in the middle of the road and it was night. So I had my headlamp on and it's like glistening off of his quills, or is that the right word? Quills? Quills. Yeah. So, but I was like, oh wow, that was so nice. They put a little bag in the middle of the road so you knew not to keep going and you knew where the turn was. And then I got there and I was like, that's not a bag. That is moving. And that's a porcupine. And somebody else saw it too. So like, it wasn't just a hallucination. So, That was pretty funny, but yeah.
Even the porcupines are volunteers there at Eastern States. That's good. That's a lot of cooperation.
Yeah, they're not letting anyone get off without helping.
Hey, I'd like to go back if we can, because heck, we've got you here on this podcast to answer this. You said you regulate your salt, and what do you do? What do you watch? How can we gain from your experience of salt management?
Well, the nice thing about that I found, and I don't know if this works for everyone, but if you mess it up, it just gets sweated out, right? So if you don't take enough, for me, I start to cramp. So I am very diligent about taking it. And I've said this to some people in the past, but I like to try to set like a watch to ring every 30 minutes or so. So it reminds me to eat or drink. And then I usually, depending on the humidity and the heat, I'll take a salt tablet at that point. So I usually just have a bag in my pocket, a Ziploc bag full of S-caps, and then every 30 minutes I'll pop one in. And that's about enough for me, depending, you know, if it's over like 70 degrees and 90% humidity, which this race got a little hotter than that. If I'm at like a race like Marathon des Sables in the Sahara Desert, I might take as many as 3 an hour. And if it's a race like Cal last year, I might take, and that's a, you know, a winter race where you're not doing as much, I might take 1 an hour or something like that. But for me, that's a trick for me to be able to keep going. If I can keep eating those, and usually I can, and then things seem to work out well. So sometimes I get, you know, a little sodium on my skin, and that usually means that I'm taking too much, and I might back it off then at that point. So that's how I do it.
Yeah, I like that strategy of kind of monitoring your own sweat rate, if you will, or at least not sweat rate, but at least that sodium that builds up.
Yeah, exactly. So you can wipe your, like, if you feel it on your forehead or you start to feel it on your cheek or something, you're probably doing too much or you need more water.
So if you're out there running and you've scheduled your watch at the interval, you take one, what would indicate to you that, you know what, I need to bump this up to 2? Do you ever adjust your original plan, and what cues do you use to say, I need more than 1 right now, I need 2?
Yeah, I think that's part of, and that's another reason I like to race, and that putting yourself in that position, right? Because you have to figure things out as you go. And so if it's, I guess there's a couple things. If I'm starting to cramp and or I'm just starting to feel bonky and I've just eaten or something, then I know that I need to do something else different. And so that's when I start going through the list of things that usually work, right? So like, do I have enough salt? Do I have enough water? Do I have enough caffeine, or do I need caffeine? You know, have I taken anything? So adjusting your plan. Like, yeah, I have a game plan that I'm planning to execute at a certain time, but if it's not working or something's going wrong, or maybe like you're descending down like the craziest pitch you've ever been on and you just can't get your hand in your pocket or else you're going to end up splattered on the side of the mountain, like, okay, then I'll go 2 minutes later, right? But at least I'll know that I need to do it. Having the flexibility to change things is always important, and never just saying like, okay, I said this is going to happen, so I have to do it. I think that's part of, you know, maturing as an athlete and a runner and an endurance person is dealing with things, because there's stuff that doesn't go right. I mean, like, I like prepared for the race. I had all my stuff laid out. My dad came and we switched cars or whatever, and I left my iPod. Like, I was like, sweet, I'm going to use this, you know. I put new music on it, like went on iTunes, got some stuff. And I got there and I was like, Dad, did you see my iPod? He's like, I haven't seen your iPod. And I was like, I saw it. I knew exactly where it was. It was like on the table when he came, and I just left it there. So like, that was the first thing that went wrong. And then I had, my dad was at an aid station and it was starting to get dark, and I was like, hey, did you bring my headlamp? And he's like, no. And I was like, oh, could you grab it out of the car or whatever? And he's like, yep, the car is like a mile away, so no. So I was like, well, I'll see you in like 10 miles. But it was like 5 o'clock, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to get there before it gets dark. So I managed to end up getting getting something that would get me to where I needed him. But man, it was like, there's so many things, little things like that, right? Where you think you have everything sorted and then something comes up and, you know, like, I swear every time I asked him for something, he didn't have it, but like, we made do. And that's what it's all about, I think. And that's why we love doing these things, because it's adapting and being able to change course and still getting it done.
And improvise.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like I was telling some of my friends, I run for a company called UVU, and one of the guys is headed over to UTMB, which is next week. You guys are probably following that, right? You know, there's a bunch of stud U.S. athletes going, and it's a big deal. But I did it last year, and I failed to take enough body glide because it rained and or Vaseline or whatever. Like, so I had lubed myself up pretty well. And so then it rained on us for like 4 hours. So like, I don't know about you, but when it rains, like all my stuff washes off. So then I started getting chafed. Right. So I'm chafed. I'm like moving super slow. Like it took me 30 hours to finish UTMB, which is my longest run so far. And so I'm moving really slow between the aid stations, and I'm really feeling bad. You know, I'm starting to chafe, maybe not as bad as Hal, but you know, pretty bad. And I'm like, I need to do something. So I reach into a puddle and grab mud, and I'm using mud as lube. So yeah, you got to make do with what you got.
Mud as lube. Now that's the first I've heard of that. It must be some clay, something generous to create some, friction decreasing.
Well, I did enough to get me to the eight. Have you? Yeah, I've used leaves, but not intentionally. They were kind of left there after I did something else.
Yeah.
Hey, in the history of Trail Runner Nation, we have never asked this question coming up, but I really feel that it hits in the theme of how to manage your salt. And if we were on a trail run, Mike, I would ask you this. What about urination? Do you try to stay so that you're always, you know, on a regular schedule, drinking enough and measuring urination kind of as a way to say, yeah, I'm good or I'm not good, or watching color or anything like that? Is that something
I totally do that. Yes.
Tell us about
that.
How you use that. Yeah.
Yeah. So my training partner and friend Steve will tell you after about 45 minutes, I'm going to stop and have to go to the bathroom. So that's the first time. So like, that just means I'm on a run lasting more than 45 minutes. and then after that, I'll kind of note it in my head. So, and then I definitely try to look at the stream to make sure that there's no discoloration or anything like that. And I'm a pretty chronic, urinator. So like, it can be a problem in some of the faster 50 mile races. Usually I can hold it for a 50K, but for anything longer than a 50K, I usually end up going a couple times. So I've had like at Comrades, I've had a couple guys say like, you must learn to pee and run. And I just can't do that. So like, they're like, no, you just whip it out and you just keep running. And, I always am like the guy who has to stop and like, you know, it's like a, you know, Austin Powers, like evacuation complete type deal. Right. So I'm like peeing and then I like, gotta go again, and I'm just watching everybody run away, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll catch up in like 5 minutes. And so yeah, usually I end up going a couple times, but I'd rather go than not go and end up in trouble. So yeah, I tend to monitor it, and I probably went 4 or 5 times during Eastern States, and that's pretty usual for me. So yeah, I usually don't have too much trouble going on the trail. Then my trouble comes in that I can't go and run at the same time.
So during these 4 or 5 times that you stop, are they spread pretty evenly through the 100 mile or the 21
No,
hours?
Actually, not always. No. So sometimes it could be like, I don't know if you've ever gone to the bar and you're sitting at the bar and like you get up and you break the seal and then you end up having to go like 5 times in the next hour, but you haven't gone for like 3 hours. Yeah.
That's the quote of the podcast right there, Mike. Break the seal.
Hashtag
Yeah. So like, once you go, usually I have to go a couple of times, pretty quick, and then usually it settles down a bit. So yeah, it's not evenly spread.
Mike, at what distance, do you really have to dial in your nutrition and electrolytes? Do you have to really worry about it at a marathon distance or a 50K distance? At what point do you have to say, at what point do you set your watch for your succeed caps in nutrition?
I think any distance over a half marathon for me is really important to have good nutrition and to stay hydrated and to make sure that you're, for me, taking the S caps. So marathon distance, and then instead of setting my watch in a marathon, I'll just do it based on the number of miles I'm clicking off. So like every 3 or 4 miles, I'll look to monitor. And I kind of look at it almost like as you're driving a car. Like I just kind of go through a little checklist, like are my legs turning over well? You know, how's my breathing? How do I feel? Am I still able to push? All those type of things. And I kind of do that in all races, really. But like, it becomes, I think, much more important as the distances get above a half marathon for me.
At what distance do you start eating real food versus gels or easy processed stuff?
I work with a company called Vitargo. So I don't know if you guys know them. It's a long chain carbohydrate, blah, blah, blah. So I take that for most of the events, and then I'll augment that with gels. And I used to be able to hammer gels, anything up to like 100K. I could take like 30, 40 gels. I could just keep knocking those suckers back. I've kind of tended to eat more real food. Like this last Eastern States, I'd go in and I think I noticed it more when I started racing over in Europe a little bit. Like those dudes just come in and graze and like hang out and like kick their feet up and like, you know, get some cookies and some pasta. And so like last year getting ready for UTMB, I kind of did that. I did the Squamish 50-50, which is coming up this weekend too. It's a 50 mile and a 50K back to back. And I was like, I'm totally Euroing it. So like, I kind of like that actually. You just kind of come in and figure out what looks good to you and then see how it goes. So like, I've been doing that a bit.
Can you expand?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're here. Hey, can you expand on that a little bit, the difference between the Euro runner and the American runner or the, you know, the different events? I think that'd be interesting to have your perspective.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot of differences, man. And that's what's so cool about getting to, you know, get to participate in these various events. But, the Europeans are much more, and it seems like in American races, like we come in and we're throwing down bottles. Yeah.
You broke up. So, something happened to the internet. I think the Europeans have some control over it because you said the Europeans are, and we went blank.
Okay. Sorry. I can start over. So
the Europeans are, this is where you make the comment.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of differences between European racers and American or North American racers in particular, in that, like, you know, a lot of us Americans, like, we'll come in on these big trail races and, you know, we're all like kind of jittery, like, hey, you know, I need my gels, I need my bottles, I need to be out of here in like less than a minute, right? And the Europeans will like stroll in, like sit down, take their shoes off, like get a bite of cheese, maybe have a plate of pasta, say hi to their family, give some high fives, do an interview, and then like go out and kick ass, you know? So like,
interview.
Yeah. It's just awesome. Like they're just like, whatever. But you know, what's crazy is they don't like, a lot of them like won't carry a lot of stuff in between. So like I was running with, Noria Picas. I don't know if you know her. She's a Spanish runner, super good. But like she just carried like a tiny little like water bottle you get at like a grocery store, and then she would just fill it up in the streams and stuff, like during the race I was running with her at. And of course I've got like my Nathan bottles, and I've like got all my stuff and a hydration pack on, and like you know, she's just like got this tiny little bottle, like, oh, I'll take a little food, take a little water here. And yeah, so it's cool to get to see how people do it differently. And the point, everybody's trying to do the best they can. And it's just a different style that they race at. And they are amazing. So it's just, there's no one right way to do things, which is so cool. You know, like we have a way that we do it, and I've kind of adapted some of their style, and I'm sure that they've adapted some of ours.
I was just going to ask you, what is one of the things you've adapted from racing in Europe that has made you a better runner?
Nice.
Poles, sticks. Those things are amazing. Like, those things are seriously amazing. I would have never made it around the UTMB course without those things. And I love them. Like, they're seriously, such an aid if you, and especially if you can get used to them. Like, I can run 20 miles with them just in my hand and without even like using them. But like, when you use them, like, for me, it makes a big difference, especially coming from, you know, a city environment where you're battling mountains that, are a little bit harder to train for, especially on the ups and the downs. But I find those to be really helpful. Like, and it's not a big deal to use them, but they can make a big difference. And so I think that, and then also just the, you know, taking your time at the aid station, not being so in a hurry to get out, is something else that I've adopted. But that being said, I think my average time at Eastern States in every aid station was like 2 minutes and 30 seconds, which for me is like an eternity. Like, the people were so impressed that they were telling my dad was crewing for me, and he's crewed me, you know, since I started. And he's like, oh my God, he's taking so long. And all the people at the aid stations are like, is he only going to stay for that long? Like, that's not very long. And my dad was like, oh my gosh, you should see him at like a 50K or a 50 mile. Like, he doesn't even slow down. Like, he just throws me his bottle. So like, but it's cool to know that you can adopt different styles for different races, depending on what you're trying to achieve.
Hey, Mike, your dad has crewed you that long, and he lets you leave the iPod at home and not let you have a headlamp? Come on, you've got to raise the game on this crew of yours.
A checklist or something he's not using?
I mean, I understand his family.
He's amazing, man. He did such a good job. Like, because I'm just, you know how it is. Like, you come in and you're like, okay, I'm going to need this, this, and this. And then by the time you get to the aid station, you're like, don't show me that. I don't want that. Like, what are you doing? You know? So, yeah, he's incredible. And yeah, I've been lucky. He hasn't really crewed me. He's never crewed me for a 100-mile race before. So this was a little different. Usually we're done before it gets dark.
Mm-hmm. How do you get along with your dad at a race? I mean, is there... Do you throw
tension
things at him when things aren't going well, or does he spank you?
I'm not that kind
of
runner. I'm usually pretty chill. Like, there was a point where he was trying to, you're tired or whatever, but there was a point where like he was trying to be helpful with giving me a headlamp, and I had two, right? Because I was like, I want to have one and then I'm going to have a backup. So he wanted to give me the one that I wanted to use as a backup first. And I was like, no, because the one that I had already, it's just like, I just couldn't tell him all this stuff while I was standing there. I was just like, just give me the other one. So like, that was about as confrontational as it got. But for the most part, he was just a rock star. Like, I would ask him for something he didn't have and we would find it somewhere, you know? So like, I was starting to get a little chafe on my ankles from just the severity of the terrain. And so I needed to put some tape there. And of course he didn't have the duct tape that I'd left out. So we ended up getting some medical tape from the people and, you know, just like little random stuff that, you know, just like, I didn't want the Vitargo flavor that he had. So he gave me another one or whatever, you know, it was just fine.
Well, He's lucky you raced so much, because with that advertisement, he's going to have calls coming in for for him to
crew. He's awesome, yeah, crew, man. Yeah. He would love to help, I'm sure. Well, my brother and sister are both my brother Matthew and my sister Marielle are both athletes too. So he's gotten to help them also.
Hey, let me ask you a question, if we can, about polls and go back to that. Why do you think there's such an aversion or, you know, here in the United States, we don't use polls very often. A lot of races say no to the polls. Do you have a thought on why we have decided at some point that we're poll-less society here?
And should we allow them? For those races that don't, should we lobby to say, hey, we should have polls?
Well, I think that, you know, it's interesting because not all the European races allow them, or different races. So I'm doing a race called Diagonal des Fous coming up in Reunion Island, and I don't think you're allowed to use them there. And I think it's just because of a crowding issue. So I'm wondering if a lot of the races are worried that because of the trails are tight and a lot of people are going to be grouped together or could be grouped together, that they don't want someone that's not familiar with them to stick somebody in the back of the leg or whatever, or trip somebody. So I can see that for sure. But yeah, I don't know why. I think it's just a cultural thing. Like, we don't wear the spandex that all the Europeans wear either, for the most part. So,
for good reason.
Well, it depends, man. Some of that spandex is pretty nice, man. If you try it, it's almost like manprees. Like, once you try manprees, you might not ever go back.
Whoa. I don't even know what manprees are. What are manprees?
Come on, dude, you gotta try them. They're like, they go over your, they go over your knees. So like the European races, a lot of them, like UTMB, you have to have full leg cover. So you wear long, like tights. They're like 3/4 tights, basically. That's what we call them here, because people don't want to be calling them capris. Cause if you call them capris, then people think they're girls, right?
Yeah. We've seen Max King wear them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Max can rock some manprees.
And no one's going to tell him not to. Hey,
no, because he's so fast and such a stud. Yeah, no one tells him what to do.
So if you're running Western State, so you said you love running with the poles. If you were go to a race with, you know, 18,000 feet of climbing like Western States, and some of them are, you know, 40-minute climbs, and near hikeable for the you know, most runners. Would you bring poles to that race if it was open and available?
Yeah, if it was open, I would totally bring poles to that race for sure. I think it would make me a lot more efficient and save my legs, so I could run faster. And that's really what it comes down to, is it allows you to take a little impact off your legs, and it makes me a little bit more comfortable descending, even just to have another point of contact.
I have a Western States comment, of something, or just 100-mile distance comment. Times seem to keep dropping and dropping, Mike. I mean, some crazy times are happening out there. Do you have a thought on, have we reached the point where it's going to start leveling off a bit, or have we found the limit to this thing? What's your forecast on performance?
No, I think it's going to keep decreasing. I think that there's more and more athletes coming into the sport. There's more and more potential for people to really excel at certain courses. And I think that we're all pushing each other to get better. And that's what's driving the times down. And I think, you know, eventually there'll be a point where they're not getting lopped off. But for the most part, I think the caliber of athlete that are doing these events is increasing, and the exposure is increasing, and the amount of participation is increasing. I mean, some of them are capped, right? Like Western States, you can only have like 400 people because of permits and that kind of stuff. But that just means that I think more and more people are going to be running faster. And I think that you're going to see that in different events going forward. And I think that's great. I think that's what it's all about, is we need to keep evolving and keep people interested and grow the sport and grow the community. So I'm all for it, man. And it makes us all have to work harder. So that's even better.
Yeah, I agree. Good comment.
Hey, Mike, you've raced a gazillion different races. What's your favorite piece of swag gear that you've gotten at a race?
Mm. Oh, man.
The axe. It's got to be that axe.
It's definitely kind of there. The axe has been pretty cool. Well, I guess I'll tell you some of my top favorites. I guess my first Boston Little Unicorn that I got, because that's what got me into running. So, like, that was pretty special. My first USA singlet. So when I first qualified for the 100K world team and I got that singlet and was able to like represent the USA. So I still have that. That's really important now. Like I trade them all because like it's awesome to like trade with the other countries. So like I have like a Norway jersey and like a Sweden jersey and like a Japan jersey and all that kind of stuff. But like the first one, that was so cool. That was like a dream come true. You know, winning my first international medal, the Guinness World Record certificate. It's pretty cool with Pierce's name on it. That's pretty awesome. The axe is really cool. Like I was surprised at how cool that was. Belt buckles. Cool. Yeah, go ahead.
Is the axe a real axe? Could you actually go out and chop some
wood? Oh yeah, no, it's for real. It's sharp, man. Like I like thought it was a joke. And then I like ran my hand down the edge and it started to like cut into me. And I was like, this is not for pretend. This is for real. So like, it's like hidden in our house now. Cause my wife's worried the kids are going to get it and like destroy the foosball table with it. Like it's full well, on.
I guess,
yeah.
I guess the belt buckles are real. Why not the axe?
Yeah. I won this really cool mask at the Coastal Challenge that was like hand carved by some of the indigenous people where we ran from. That's really neat. Yeah, I've won a lot of really cool stuff. It's always special when you get something that's unique, right? Not just like like a ribbon or something like that. So like, even like we put on a little 5K for our kids' school. And we had the kids make the ribbons, and that was even special. You know what I mean? Like the, you know, this could be made by your kid type thing.
How about your, of all the races you've ever run, what has been the most, scenic? Like you wanted to keep stopping and looking and taking mental photos.
Wow. There's been a lot. I think, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Kauai, but Kauai Marathon is pretty incredible. That's been a really beautiful race. And I'm headed to Peru this weekend for the Andes race. It's an 80K that's going to be up near Machu Picchu. So I'm looking forward to that. That's been on my list for a long, long time. And I think that's going to be pretty spectacular. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know yet because there's a lot more to see. But I think the Marathon de Sable is another one that comes to mind. Like, there's nothing quite like standing or running in the middle of the night in the Sahara Desert. You're just like, it looks like you're running through the Milky Way because the stars are so close and there's no light pollution out there. So it's just surreal. Those are pretty epic for sure.
Running has really allowed you to see many parts of the world and experience things that some of us just kind of lay and think about, you know, some of the views and some of the events that you get to toe the line at.
There's Michael, more that I actually, sorry to interrupt, but like the North Pole Marathon, I did that and won that last year. And that scenery is unlike anything you've ever been on. It's like you basically got dropped on a moonscape. So like that was pretty surreal, and knowing that you could die, like, because you're not supposed to be there basically. So that's interesting. Sorry, go ahead though. I jumped in.
No, I was just going to say, we're going to have you on again because there are two big topics that I want to pick your brain on. One is the whole recovery thing. You must have it dialed, or maybe you just have a really high pain threshold. And the second thing is
how to use an axe,
how to make kindling out of a foosball table. And the second one is, You know, although you're sponsored by some pretty cool companies, you have a full-time job and you have a family, and that's one thing that always interests me. You know, most of us do, and the balance, that life, work, family, racing balance is also something that I think we could do another very good podcast about those two topics. So
yeah,
you have to promise
love that.
To come back on.
Yeah, I would love that. Yeah, that would be a super treat. You guys have been super really fun to talk to, and I've enjoyed it. It's always fun to talk with like-minded people and get to talk about things that we all enjoy. So yeah, I would love to do that, because I think so many of us, you know, we have these real life responsibilities. You know, we are kind of confined in a lot of ways, and it's something where I think a lot of people end up giving up on their dreams to maybe fulfill some of the obligations they have in their life. And I'm hoping that what I'm doing can show people that you can kind of still fulfill your obligations and responsibilities and still have those dreams and make them a reality.
That's perfect. That's the podcast right there. You just
it's a
last comment.
It's,
yeah,
in the business, Don, that's called a cliffhanger. That's what we call in the business.
Okay. Well, good. I'm gonna jot that down. While I'm writing that down, Scott, why don't you close this thing out?
So, Michael, if someone has been interested in this podcast and they stayed to the very end and want to learn more about you, in fact, we'll include this in the show notes too. Where can we follow you? Where can we learn more about you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I'm on all the social media channels except Google+. I haven't like committed to that yet, but I'm on Twitter at Mike Wardian, Instagram at Mike Wardian, and then I have a Facebook page, which is full, my personal page, but I also have an athlete page, so you can find me there. And then I have a traditional website. It's www.mikewardian.com. And then you can find me on some of my sponsor websites and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of the easiest way for people to get in touch with me at the moment. And I hope to hear from everyone.
Awesome. Well, we certainly will help link that on the show notes, and, yep. and really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of the fun and some of the details of running distances and managing salt and effort and all those things. It's a real treat to get to hear from someone with your experience and success and learn a little bit from you. And so we appreciate that.
Yes, and down to earth, just good personality.
Absolutely. So, Mike Wardian, go out and run.
Mas.
Thanks a lot, boys.